This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
It's a given that parenting can be very, very hard and that raising children is difficult in different ways at different times in your kids' lives.
There are the infant years, baby boot camp, sometimes described as the longest, shortest time. There's the toddler stage with its classic terrible twos, sometimes extending into the terrible threes. And then there's adolescence.
The teenage years. That's a period of life that's often as confusing for moms and dads as it is for teens themselves. Here's a scene from ABC's Modern Family where the various parents on the show, many of them the mothers and fathers of teenagers, describe what it takes to be a good parent.
What's the key to being a great dad? Well, that's a tough one.
Giving them the freedom to be whatever they want to be.
Right, exactly.
Whether that's a painter, a poet, a pilot, a president.
And for us,
company or of a country.
Well, be their buddy.
That's your answer?
And stay in school.
No.
And don't do drugs.
No.
Just give me the answer.
Oh, God.
Joining us now in the studio is someone who does have some answers for parents of adolescent age kids. Joni Geltman lives in Natick and has a new book out called A Survival Guide to Parenting Teens, talking to your kids about sexting, drinking, drugs, and other things that freak you out. She also has a master's degree in social work, and she's an instructor at Curry College in Milton, where she teaches about child and adolescent development and family psychology. Joni, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thanks for having me.
And listeners, if you have questions, if you're the parent of a teenager, you're approaching those years, you've been through those years, if you're trying to navigate these issues, this is your chance to call in, tell us what you're experiencing, get some advice, and give us your advice. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Joni Geltman, first, that Modern Family clip we heard, the sort of all-over-the-map input about parenting. Do you find, when you talk to parents, that it is as all-over-the-map as those parents tend to be about what's important?
Well, I think that a lot of it has to do with the parent that you, the family that you grew up in, right? So you bring to the table the expectations that your parents laid on you, and then, right, and then you have your kids, and you think you're going to be so different than your parents were with you, and then you find yourself saying all those same things. So there are other parents that are really happy to let their kids do and go and be whoever they are, and then there are those parents who are terrified of that and also have their own expectations about where and how they want their kids to grow up. And so the truth is in the middle. You have to give yourself the kids direction, and you need to let them be who they are.
Would you also address the kids today issue? And what I mean by that is that pretty much every generation thinks that younger generations are more disobedient and incorrigible than they were. But especially given technology, in your view, is it really more challenging today to be a teenager and because of that to be the parent of a teenager?
You know, this generation of parents are the first generation of parents to experience something with their teenagers that they themselves did not experience as teenagers. So, yeah, I'm guessing people out there did a little sex, a little drugs, a little rock and roll when they were in their teen years. But they didn't grow up with computers. They didn't grow up with social networking. And so we all kind of jumped into the pool at the same time. And so parents and teens basically use the technology together in the same way. And parents have a little bit more, hopefully, impulse control, except for people like Anthony Weiner and other people. but parents, you know, can put their phones down sometimes and have a conversation. But because kids have grown up with this stuff since they were babies, this generation now, they're already hooked into it's an addiction at this point. And so it's hard for kids because they don't think their parents understand how important all of the social networking, and it is ridiculously important to them. There's the initials FOMO, which is afraid of missing out. Mm-hmm. And kids are obsessively checking their cell phones and their Instagram and their Twitter feeds and their Snapchats. And, you know, there's 1,000 things that they're – and parents get so frustrated. So kids think their parents don't get how important this is to them. And then parents don't get why kids can't just stop doing it. It's a disconnect.
Joni, in your book, A Survival Guide to Parenting Teens, you basically break it down by category of issue or problem. And so you have the problem, you have a little analysis of what's the behavior or the feeling that the teen is having to cause this problem, and then what's your advice on what the parent can say or do. And you really cover comprehensively quite a bit of issues, drugs, alcohol, academics, things from relatively benign as a lazy teenager or a teenager with a messy room to quite serious, you know, depression, date rape, cutting. Could you identify for us, to use your subtitle language, what you consider the biggest freakout issues for parents today of that big list?
Yeah, I think the biggest freakout right now and what I get called on for my coaching is the social networking piece. I think that kids are using social networking in a way that nobody expected them to, and that is, to explore their sexuality, to make plans privately so their parents don't find out about them, and to put that on the top of their priority list as what is most important in their life. And listen, we all had things. I mean, we had music and we had phones. But this has taken on a new challenge. And I think what's happened is that parents have given their kids this technology when they're quite young. They've given them an iPad. They've given them an iTouch. They've given them an iPod. They've given them a laptop. They've given them a smartphone. So these kids have multiple devices in front of them. And then when parents try to say, you're not doing your homework, or come down and talk to the family, their teens are furious with them for interfering with what to them now is a priority in their life. So that's one problem.
We have a piece of sound from the comedian Louis C.K.
And
I want to play this because it ties into a piece of advice you have. This is him talking about children and smartphones.
Some parents really struggle with, like, all the other kids have the terrible thing, so my kid has to. Yeah, let your kid go and be a better example to the kids. Just because the other stupid kids have phones doesn't mean that, okay, well, my kid has to be stupid, otherwise she'll feel weird. I think these things are toxic. Especially for kids.
Now, what I find interesting about this is in your book, you basically seem to say parents are just softies on this issue, and wrongly so, that they feel like they have to be hands-off of their kids' cell phones and computers.
They're afraid.
And you say, no, you should be stepping in, that it's a necessary evil that you be monitoring your kids' online activity.
Yeah, I mean, I have such empathy for them, for parents. I really do. This is so not easy, because this is now layered on top of other things that parents have historically always had to worry about. You always had to worry about kids doing their homework. You always had to worry about them, getting on the phone and having attitude and having a messy room. But this is really like a whack-a-mole problem, because every week there seems to be some new app that is very dangerous and that kids should not be downloading on their phone. And when I've talked to parents, for example, Snapchat is one of my Achilles heels. I hate this app.
This is the system where the text disappears shortly
after
it's been sent.
Yes, and so there's definitely the issues around sexual content, because kids do write things that with a very heavy-duty sexual language and perhaps sending very provocative, sexy pictures. But the other thing they do is that they use that to talk to their friends about things they don't want their parents to see. So then it means they can't monitor. So maybe kids are saying, hey, let's sneak out Saturday night at 9. My parents go to bed really early. And, so there are things that in the old days, parents could check their Facebook wall. They could check their text messaging. And kids have smartened up. And they know that, well, I'll just write benign things on my, on my texting, but I'll use Snapchat to communicate things to my friends I really don't want my parents to see. And those things can be unsafe. So if parents allow their kids to download these apps that are unsafe. So I have parents saying to me, I could never take my kids' Snapchat away. I mean, terrified of the anger that their kids are going to lay out on them. And that's the fear I see. Parents are afraid their kids aren't going to like them anymore.
And you think parents need to get over that fear?
Oh, they need to, because their kids will get over it. And the truth of it is their kids love them. That's the bottom line. They're not going to stop loving them because they've taken Snapchat away. They get over it. They just totally get over it. And I think parents, the conflict level is very high. Kids will flip out on them. They will go crazy. And then parents get hooked into the, I'm a bad parent. All the other parents let their kids do it. And, and then they're stuck and they don't do anything.
Listeners, we're talking with Joni Geltman. She's a Natick resident who has written a book called A Survival Guide to Parenting Teens. Talking to your kids about sexting, drinking, drugs, and other things that freak you out. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. We're interested in the kind of challenging adolescent parenting issues you're dealing with. Joni's here to answer questions. We're also interested in your experiences about how you deal with them, what works and what doesn't work. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Joni, I want to play another Modern Family clip. It's just such a great source. It's such a great resource for the kinds of parent-child issues today. This is where Phil and Claire Donfey, who are the parents of teenager Haley, they confront their daughter over her plans for the future.
Honey, we care about you, and we want to make sure that you've got a plan, because it seems like you're meandering.
No, sweetie, don't just start texting because you don't like the conversation.
Here.
What is this?
That's a blog that I've been doing. I know it's not a huge moneymaker right now. I'm going to take a business class next semester, which I'm hoping will help me turn all of this into becoming a stylist. So yeah, I guess that is my plan.
So interesting, right? I mean, they think their kid is tuning them out. It turns out she's got this whole world, this potentially productive world that's going to help her in employment down the line on that little screen. So you also address in your book the fact that parents need to remember that that's how kids largely communicate today. You don't want to completely shut them off. So how do you find that balance of maybe what's happening on that little screen is productive? It's not just your kid tuning you out, you and the world.
Yeah, well, I think that they should have known that she was writing a blog. I think that's really the point, is that
they should have been in touch enough with her life to realize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that the parents, sometimes their expectations are unrealistic. So they I look at that young woman and she's alternative. She's had a hard time kind of settling in, and she's not going to go the traditional route. And I work with a lot of parents whose kids, you know, maybe shouldn't be going to a 4-year college, or they're not going to be in a traditional career path, but they have some other passion that maybe they can turn into, you know, as they sort of mature and go someplace else. And I think in this particular case, they were trying to fit this girl who didn't fit the, you know, like their other kids, who wasn't going to go a direct line, you know, to college and graduate school and get their job and support them when they're all at age. This kid is going a different way. And I think that parents, one of the things I think is really important is for parents to step back and say, who is my kid? What turns them on? And I think they forgot to ask that about her daughter, you know, to say what turns them on. And they would have found out then that the blog was something that turned her on.
There's also an interesting stat in your book about a survey done by Nielsen that says that the average number of texts sent by a teen per month in 2013 is 3,399. That's the average for
women.
That's
the average. That means
that's
low. Yeah.
Right. For girls, it's more than 4,000.
Yeah.
So again, I think you seem pretty good in your book about reminding parents that you can't just say, get off your phone, you're wasting time. It is a communication method today, just like kids long ago may have dragged the rotary phone and the cord into their bedroom. So parents always seem to be walking that delicate balance of not just saying, get off that stupid thing, but trying to remember that it is a lifeline and sometimes a productive lifeline, as
and
we
so
said.
One of the things that I use, it's called what I call the I get it statements. And for a parent to, when they're trying to help their kids set some limits on how and when they use the phone, is to be able to say to their kids, I get how important this is to them. Not, oh my God, I can't believe how much time you spend on your phone and I'm taking it away from you if you don't get off it. It's, I get how important this is to you. I get your friends are number one to you right now. And we have to find a way to do both. One of the things I suggest is for parents to have their kids look at their phone bills once a month. Cell phones are magical. Kids have absolutely no idea how much time they're really spending on them. And I love parents to sit down and say, part of the privilege of having a cell phone is that every month, I just want you to look at the number of texts you're using. I'm not going to tell you you can't use it that much. I'm not going to tell you I'm taking your phone away. I just want you to see that maybe you've been sending 15,000 texts and there's 10 pages of them. Did you know? Give them some awareness. Take away from the mindlessness and at least say, I just want you to know how much time this is costing you. Because I think kids don't really get it.
Listeners, if you have questions for Joni Geltman, the author of A Survival Guide to Parenting Teens, call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we have Valerie calling from the South End. Valerie, we're interested in your thoughts on this conversation.
Hi, thank you. I'm actually a live-in nanny for a family with one child. She is in fifth grade, and she just got her heart's desire after owning all the other Apple products. She finally has an iPhone. So I'm just interested. I would say I provide the majority of homework help and behavioral management for this kid, and her behavior has been going downhill, yet she was still awarded this piece of technology. So I'm just interested in the author's thoughts on parents who are on totally different pages from someone else like myself that's in a really critical role of behavioral development for a kid who is just distancing herself further and further from the parents, but they don't seem to really want that reality check.
Ah, Valerie, good question.
Joan? Oh, I love you, Valerie. If someone had given me the perfect question, you're the person. Okay, first of all, I get that the kid wants to have a phone at this age. I'm sure all her friends have it. Here's some things you can do. One is that there are ways to limit who downloads the apps on that phone. This kid should not have the ability to download any app on that phone, that she needs to come to an adult in the family, either the parents or you, and if you're the primary person right now, and that way you can limit the amount of distraction, because really a lot of these apps are just time sucks. It means, you know, they're more exciting to watch a TV show on a tiny little screen or text or take a silly picture and send it to a friend or who's on Instagram and who's on Twitter. So that would be my first suggestion, is limit the number of apps that this kid can put on her phone. That's number one. Number two is there should be, especially at this age, at fifth grade, there is no reason for this kid to have this phone from the second she walks in the door until the second she goes to bed. There should be, just like television, I get that she would want to play, because that's really what they're doing in fifth grade, play on the phone for an hour when she gets home from school. And then the phone can get shut off. If you call your carrier now, you can actually set them so that they shut off at certain times and turn back on certain times. That way you don't have to get in the fight of, well, give me your phone for a few hours. No, 5 more minutes.
And Joni, you think that in the case of a nanny, as Valerie was, she needs to sort of establish her own rules if her employer parents have conflicting ones?
I think they need to come on the same page because I'm afraid there'll be sort of a good cop, bad cop in this situation. But these are reasonable rules because the problem is, you know, I work with college students, and by the time they get to me, they are so addicted to their technology that teaching has become, you know, half my class is, put your phone away. And if you want your kids to be successful in life, you have to teach them some self-control. They don't have it themselves. They're way too impulsive. So she gets the phone for an hour. She gets it, you know, it gets shut off for 2 or 3 hours. She can have it for another 45 minutes or an hour before she goes to bed. And that's it. That's all she needs. At 11 years old, they don't need to hold that in their hand and be using it all the time.
We have another caller. This is Lisa calling from Wayland. Hi, Lisa.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Good, good. So what's your experience with this?
Okay. So I have a child who actually is turning 14 today. He's a great student, A student, but he spends, in my opinion, way too much time on the computer playing video games and Skyping with his friends. That seems to be how kids interact these days. But it's difficult for a parent because you want them to do something else. Today's example is that my son for 2 months, whose birthday, as I said, is today, wants a video game that is rated B above his age limit. And there's a part of me that feels like it's okay. He's a good student. This is his social activity. He's doing it with other people, good grades and so forth. The other part of me thinks it's just not right. And I'm really conflicted.
Lisa, thank you for that, Joni.
Is it just not right because of it has violent content or something like that, or just not right because it's just more distraction?
I think we do have some control. We have gotten control through parental controls by limiting the amount of time. But he's a good kid. He comes home. He does his homework first. You know, I mean, he gets good grades. And, you know, the computer turns off at 7. But when it comes to this particular thing, he really wants this game. It's, you know, the release date is today. It's his birthday. He's been talking about it for 2 months. And I am conflicted.
Well, it sounds to me like you've got some good structure in place. And that as long as the game itself is not something you are disturbed about, then I think in some ways you're saying, and I would connect it to say, you know, what we've seen is that you're able to do well in school and play your video games. And as long as we see that pattern continuing, then we'll support you getting this game. If that should change, then we'll have to change. But I think, you know, I'm not opposed to giving kids this stuff. It's more about putting controls that you can't sit on a Saturday and play it for 8 hours consecutively. I say happy birthday.
Joni, here's another caller. This is Kathy from Winchester. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. My comment is I have a 17-year-old who claims he was the only person at the SATs who put a non-smartphone in the basket. He does not own a smartphone. And my question is, am I not being fair to him?
Well, I'm going to say it's 17. I think it's, you know, I understand that, you know, part of the one of the issues of adolescence is self-consciousness and this worry about what other people are thinking about you. That is rampant in adolescence. And so for a 17-year-old to not have a smartphone, even I'm a big fuddy-duddy, let me tell you, I think that he's probably okay to have one again. But you can be on top of the number of apps that get downloaded on that phone so that he's, you know, that he doesn't end up spending more time watching, you know, TV and movies and playing games on his phone than he does doing other things that you think are important. And again, at 17, I would want him to try to learn how to do that because he's going to be leaving for college in another year or two or work or some other thing besides being at home and in school, that you want him to start learning how to take control and set limits on himself. So I think that that's a way for him to develop skills about setting limits. So I'd say, yeah, go ahead, get him the phone.
Shoni, I have a closing question for you, which is that if we pull back the lens from just sort of computer issues, you talk about how teenagers are often narcissistic, but you say that's temporary. And you say that even if you've taught them all these values and they seem gone, no, they're really just in hibernation.
Yeah.
So if that's true and most teenagers will come out okay in the end, does it really matter what the parenting approach is if most kids are going to go through that stage and be fine when it's all over?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I'm going to write about that in my next book. Yes, it does, because they're still formulating values. They're still learning how to treat people. So you can't just say, oh, they're narcissistic now, I'm not going to deal with it, because they're still creating the foundations of who they're going to be. I mean, they're creating identity. Adolescence is all about creating identity. So you want them to have to grapple with those issues, knowing that and having realistic expectations about they're not going to be perfect now, but they will be perfect later.
Shoni Geltman is the author of A Survival Guide to Parenting Teens, talking to your kids about sexting, drinking, drugs, and other things that freak you out. Shoni, thanks very much for coming
in. And can I just say that I'm going to be at New England Book Fair on Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Come and join me, and I'm going to be doing a program there.
More advice, more answers that
evening. More advice, more answers, and wine and cheese.
Shoni, thanks for coming in. Stay with us. Coming up, an MIT student sets out to become the youngest person to fly around the world solo. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.